All right. Can you see my screen?
I can.
Now, one of the things I just did is I went to Redfin because I like Redfin because you can go here to more filters and you could say time on Redfin more than 90 days, right? You click on the filters and it'll show you all the homes that have been on Redfin, which is the MLS for over 90 days. But you look, it only shows the clear areas. It doesn't show like the smaller areas in gray, right? So in Charlotte, Larry, are you targeting some of the gray areas here? Like
those are my areas. Those are my areas.
This is why you can't use Redfin maybe, right? But if you go to Zillow, if I go to Zillow, do Charlotte, North Carolina, and I zoom out, you get the entire area. You get all of these homes. And I'm looking at just homes that you could do, or houses. You can do condos, townhomes, land.
Just do houses and manufactured.
Okay.
Right? And then go up to price, do up to 100,000 max. Click on max. 100,000. Okay. Right? And then on more. On more, you're going to click on, you don't even really need anything there. You don't even need anything.
You could do that on Zillow, but what I like to do, though, is now I've got all these properties. There's 1,300 of them. You could sort by newest, all right, and then go to the last page.
Right.
Right.
What I like to do is sort by cheapest.
Ah, you do. Okay. Sort by cheapest.
I like to sort by cheapest. Now, here's the thing. Some auction properties, foreclosure and auction properties, they're going to be first. You might have to go a couple of pages. Go over there to your left beside where you typed in Charlotte and click on for sale and uncheck the potential. Oh, it's already. Yeah.
Do you uncheck foreclosures too?
No, I don't. I do uncheck new construction.
Yeah.
Like you did.
Okay.
Yeah, but you might have to go a page or two down because the auction stuff, you can get those on auctions anyway, right?
Yeah.
You can get those on auctions anyway.
Let's just go to page 3 here. Still auction foreclosures. Here we go. 7,500, 8,900. Would you put a bid on that?
Maybe. I'd have to look at it. First thing I'm going to do is scroll through and look at the pictures. 8,900 bucks. The floor is caving in. No, just move on.
All right.
Just move on. I want something typically that's livable or close to livable. You know, it doesn't need to be intimidating to your buyer. Well, what's that brick house right there? Scroll back up. Oh, maybe it was the one bottom right there. It wasn't a brick, but it's a ranch right there where your mouse is.
$9,900. There's no interior pictures. 2-bedroom, 1-bath.
There's a reason that there's no interior pictures.
Yes.
It's because the interior is probably gutted.
Yeah. So you want something that is more somewhat livable already, right?
Yeah, exactly. I bought houses from Erica Holmes, the listing agent.
Erica Simpson?
I bought many houses from her.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing you got to think about. If you want to resell this, they can't sell this at $9,900. So how are you going to be able to sell it for $10,000?
Because I know, number one, I know how to market it, right?
Ah, okay.
And number two, I know how to structure the sale. I could buy this house for $10,000 as long as the interior is not gutted, right? I could buy it for $10,000. I could sell it for $29,900 and get a couple thousand dollars down and have them pay me $400 or $500 a month.
Yeah, sell it on terms. So. But you want it, like, this is a foreclosure. Looks
good.
Oh, look at that. Sort of decent inside.
It's livable.
Yeah. All right, they're asking $14,000. 2-bedroom, 1-bath, 776 square feet. Does that scare you at all?
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up. Lenders will typically not loan on a house that's less than 750 square feet, okay? Mm-hmm. If I'm buying a house and it's less than that, I'm going to point that out to my seller, right? I'm going to point that out to my seller. Doesn't mean I'm not going to buy it. It just means I'm going to get a better price, right?
So if you buy this, you're going to sell it probably on terms. You're going to sell it.
Maybe. Maybe. Now, if I'm wholesaling an MLS property, guys, this is very important. Pay attention to this. If I'm wholesaling an MLS property, I prefer, I almost demand that I wholesale it for less than the list price.
Yeah.
For example, this house is probably not a good example, but if I was going to wholesale this house, I would need to get it where I could wholesale it for $10,000 to $12,000. Okay. Because like a typical wholesale deal that I would buy off the MLS, maybe it's listed for 40. I pick it up for 20 and wholesale it for 30. Right.
Yeah.
It's just, that's kind of just simple numbers, but that's a typical kind of wholesale deal that we would do. Cause I want to be able to wholesale a property. What's that brick house on the left right there?
Oh, let me go back one.
Yeah. I want to be able to wholesale it for less. Now, if I see a tarp on the roof, I'm just going to move on. Okay.
Look at this one. It doesn't even have.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That must have been the brick house I saw, but it doesn't have a roof on it at all, right? How do they think they're going to sell that? That's why it's been on the market for 6 months.
Wow. Looks like it used to be a multifamily, maybe, no?
It does kind of, doesn't it?
Well, from one angle, yeah, but it's not.
They're calling it a lot. Here's the thing with a lot, too, guys. Pay attention to this. If somebody tries to sell you a house, whether it's MLS, on market, off market, whatever, if they say, well, the house needs to be torn down, you know, the value's in the lot. Well, here's the thing. It's going to cost you probably $5,000 to $7,000 to have the house torn down and moved away, right? Hauled to the dump. So if somebody tells me, well, the lot's worth $5,000, well, then you should probably pay me a couple $1,000s to take it because it's going to cost me $5,000 to get the house off of it, right?
Yeah. How much would you pay me to buy your house? I've asked sellers that before.
Yeah.
How much are you going to pay me to buy your house?
Yeah. And here's the way you say that. How much would you be willing to come to closing to get this monkey off your back?
Mm-hmm. That's good. Okay. So do you ever do like maybe a minimum when you're looking at Zillow, do you ever do like a minimum of like maybe $25,000? So you're just,
you know, no, but here's what you do. You do a minimum of 5,000. Okay. Do a minimum of 5,000 and it eliminates all the auction stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? I forgot that a minute ago, obviously.
So I'm sorting it by cheapest here. Now some people are looking at this, Larry, and they're intimidated. They're like freaking out. Like, how could I look? These are the ugliest, worst houses I've ever seen in my entire life, right?
Let me tell you something. I got to tell you this story, Joe.
Yeah.
When Dan's been with me about a year and a half, and he sells all of our houses. We call him our asset manager, right? Our asset manager. Because think about it. In the real estate foreclosure business, an asset manager is somebody that disposes of the property, right? Disposes of the asset. A lot of real estate companies, a lot of wholesalers call it disposition manager, right?
Right.
It's really just a salesperson, but we call him an asset manager. When he first came to work with me and he started looking at these properties, he had a hard time selling them. He's like, Larry, I can't sell this house. This house needs $10,000 in work. I can't sell this house. It's got to have the kitchen updated, the bathroom updated. I can't sell this house. It needs a new roof. Right?
Yeah.
He heard me get on the phone one day, and he said, this is what totally changed it for him. He saw me get on the phone one day and sell a house without talking about the house. I didn't even talk about the house, right?
Yeah.
I said, look, this property, you're going to have X in it. You're going to spend X to fix it up. And then you're going to be able to rent it out for X. And you're going to get X cash flow every single month, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how I sold the property. I didn't sell it based on the size of the house, the number of bedrooms, the square footage, you know, right? The neighborhood. I didn't sell it based on that. I sold it based on the numbers. I was selling to an investor, a landlord, right? Mm-hmm. And what do landlords care about? The numbers. What's their return on investment? He said, Larry, when I heard you sell that house, And you didn't even talk about the bedrooms, the baths, the square footage, or any of that. He said, I realized what my job is. I realized what I'm doing, right? And he's been doing great ever since. He's been doing great ever since.
Nice. I love that. Yeah. I have the same similar stories with my people on my team. You know, well, I'll skip that story for now. Larry, this is a good house. All right. This is
it's a double wide.
Yep. Or it's a modular home, maybe?
Manufactured. Manufactured is a fancy word or the industry term for double wide, right?
Okay.
Or single wide or double wide could be a manufactured home.
So this
but that's what the industry likes to call it, right? Really a mobile home.
Yes, okay. But it's got a good foundation. It's got like a brick.
What year is that? Late 90s, early 2000s? Scroll down a smidge. On the right side, scroll down a smidge. 1992. So it's you know, early 90s, right?
Yeah.
I should have known that from the paneling in it. But I like old mobile homes. I like to stay 90s or newer, but don't get me wrong. I'll buy one in the 80s. I bought them in the 70s, right? But the industry will tell you the average life of a mobile home is 30 years or less, depending on the mobile home.
This looks like it has a CMU block wall for a foundation or lower. That's interesting, isn't it? That's a good sign.
Yeah. It's a block foundation, which is good. That's pretty standard around here. In fact, I prefer that to a vinyl underpinning or vinyl skirting, they call it, right?
Right, right.
So that property's been on the market for 168 days. Scroll down and look at the price history. Let's see how long it's or if it's had any price drops. Okay, look right here. Mm-hmm. Click on more price history. See more. Okay, so it was sold in 2018 for 66. That could be the foreclosed lender.
Yeah.
Then it was listed for 43 in November of last year. They 2018. Then they dropped it to 39. Then they dropped it again. Then it was removed. Right.
Yeah.
Now where is it? Is it
31.6?
Yeah. Well, it says it was removed. So is it still on the market?
It looks like it is. It's contact agent.
So what I would do is I would go in and offer in the low to mid teens, and I would try to wholesale it for, you know, I would probably try to wholesale it for around $25,000.
Nice. And how much would this rent for?
If I was going to sell or finance it, right? If I was going to sell or finance it, I would probably pay 20 for it, and I would sell or finance it for 49.9 and get about $5,000 down.
And again, you wouldn't put any work into it. You wouldn't fix it up.
No.
What would this rent for?
I would tell my buyer, if my buyer says, "Oh, but it needs this, it needs this, it needs this." Yes, I can do that. But you know, we've got a program where we're going to help you become a homeowner. And then you're going to be able to do it yourself. You can pick out your colors. You can do it at your leisure. You can move in anytime, right? Or if you'd like for me to go ahead and fix it up, I can go ahead and do all that stuff. But remember, I, as a business, I have to hire a licensed, bonded, insured contractor. And the work that you could get done for $2,000 or $3,000, it's probably going to cost me $15,000, especially if you do some of the work yourself. Right. So I could do that work for you, but instead of $49.9, I'm going to have to charge you $69.9 or $64.9 or whatever. Right. And then your payment's going to go up $150. So it's up to you. Which one would you rather do?
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I make it so obvious that they can't pick paying more.
Yeah. Well, this is good. That's a good example here. And, What would this rent for, do you think? The rent's estimate here says $1,000.
You know, forget the Zestimate. I tell people all the time, remember this, Zestimate means zilch, right? I don't care if it's the value or the rent Zestimate. I ignore it, okay?
Okay.
Also, I got to tell you this. I'm a little bit different than a lot of people. A lot of people think, oh, the rent comps are $600 to $800, right? Or $600 to $700. I might get $850. I might get $995, right? Because how many buyers do I need for a house? One, right? So when people ask me, what is the payment? I say, how much can you handle? How much are you paying in rent right now? How much can you handle? When people say, how much do you require down? How much do you have to work with? You know, I'm a little flexible. Most people put 20% down, but I'm a little flexible. What do you have to work with? Now think about it. On a $50,000 house, 20% is 10 grand. I'm not going to get 10 grand unless I ask for it, right? I'm not going to get it unless I ask for it, right? Some people have that. Most people don't. Most people have two or three. If I get five, I'm happy, right? 10%. If I get 10% down, I'm happy. But sometimes you get people that have a lot more than that to put down. This house reminds me of that house. We bought a double wide up close to the Virginia line a while back, and we paid $17,000 for it, okay? We sold that house for $69,900, and we got $5,000 down. Now, I had $17,000 in it, minus my five, I had $12,000 in this house, okay? And then I had $600 a month coming in for the next 20 years. I sold that note, and I cashed out a little over $50,000.
How long did you keep the note before you sold it?
I think I had it about 6 months.
Nice.
Now, you don't have to season your notes to sell them. It really depends on who you're selling them to. Yeah. But if you do season your note, you can get more for them.
Yeah. Let me give you guys a plug here real quick for Larry's coaching workshops that he does. How often, Larry, do you do these workshops in your office? A couple times
a year? About once a quarter. We have people fly here to my office from all over the country, even around the world. We've had people fly here from Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, China, Israel, the Philippines.
I want to plug this because you actually get to go to Larry's office, see his operation, meet his team members, meet all the people that are working with him. But he dives deep. It's not the intent of this course to show you how to do owner financing or structure notes or to do that kind of stuff. That's not the scope of this course that we're doing here. But if you want to dive deeper into the filthy riches strategy that Larry is talking about here, you got to contact their office and get to one of their workshops that they do here, because on those 3 days, isn't it, Larry?
Yeah. It starts with 3 days. That's what we call our partner program. Yeah. And it starts with 3 days in my office. And it's not education. I mean, when you get to that level, Joe, I give you all my courses. I give you all the rest of the courses that you don't already own, right? But we spend the 3 days of you getting your business set up, right? You getting it set up so when you go home, the phone starts ringing off the hook. And then I'm just basically helping you through every deal, right? That's the way that program works. I just help you through your deals. And instead of us going back and forth and communicating in a coaching mentor relationship about how do you do this or what do you do with that, we're actually working on deals together.
Yeah, that's good. I wanted to plug that because that is education, actually. It's like you're learning by doing, and you're going to be in their office doing this stuff. It's cool. They actually get on the phone. You actually start talking to sellers. You actually make offers while you're in their office, which is...
Well, we call it implementation and application, not education.
Yeah, very good. All right. So just contact Larry's office if you're interested in working with them in the partner program. How many people do you have typically come to one of those workshops, Larry?
It's a very small group. It's usually about 15 or so, you know, and we do have a page set up for that. It's LarryGoins.com/apply.
Good. LarryGoins.com/apply. Go check that out. All right, cool, Larry. So we took a little sidetrack there. I wanted to just show people on sites like Redfin, you're only going to get the big MSAs. On Zillow, you can go way out and get all of the properties, and you can get for sale by owners as well, which is important.
Which drives home my point that not near as many people are searching in the small towns, because a lot of these websites like Redfin, they're, the properties in small towns don't even show up.
Yep. Yeah. Which is good. Which is good for us. All right. Yeah, so what next? What's next, Larry? We've got, we talked about Realtor.com, Zillow, Trulia, PropBot, Search Tempest, Oodle, Buy Owner Daily. Do we need to talk about auctions?
Yeah, let's talk about auctions. There's two different types of auctions. There's online and offline auctions, okay? Online auctions and offline auctions. Let's start out with offline auctions. Offline auctions are where you physically go to an auction. They used to do them at hotels, right? Mm-hmm. They used to do them at hotels. Companies like Hudson and Marshall or Williams and Williams, they would have a hotel set up. They would have all these properties that they would put up on the PowerPoint, and they would have people bid on them, right? I used to go there to find buyers, because I know people who go to an auction, they're a cash buyer, because you're not going to be bidding unless you have cash, right? Unless you have cash. I got to tell you a story real quick. This really literally just blew me away, right? You know, I wanted to sell properties. I wanted to sell, you know, courses and coaching and books and stuff like that, and also do lending, right? We do all those things. So Hudson and Marshall was having an auction a while back. And so I call up Hudson and Marshall's office, and I asked to speak to their event planner, right, about their upcoming auction that they were having in Charlotte. And I said, you know, I offer financing, and I also sell you know, properties and educate people as well. I said, I'd like to rent a booth at your event. I'd like to have a vendor table set up right outside the door, right, of your event, so I could hand out some flyers and stuff like that. And the lady said, well, I don't have anything to do with that. You'll have to contact the hotel. I said, so what you're telling me is, you don't really have vendors at your event, but if I contact the hotel, I could rent a table from them and you're okay with it. She said, yeah, I don't have anything to do with that. I said, oh, okay. So I call up the hotel. I didn't do this. Candace did this. So Candace is my integrator. Like, it's like an operations person. So Candace calls up the hotel, and she said, yeah, you've got an event coming up, Hudson and Marshall. We spoke with them, and we want to rent a vendor table right outside. How much do you charge for one of those little, you know, 3 by 6 foot tables? She said, $15. So what credit card would you like to use, right? So yeah. So this blew me away. So here I am. I'm at Hudson and Marshall's auction. They have hundreds and hundreds of people. I'm the only vendor there, right? I'm the only vendor there. I've got flyers. I've got stuff set up. I've got a backdrop. We offer financing. We do this. So, and they have two check-in tables, right? So I walk up to the check-in table, and I say, hey, I've got a few flyers here about financing and stuff. Do you mind if I set some here on your checkout table or your check-in table? She said, no, that's okay. Just put them right here. I mean, I couldn't believe how well received I was, right? And they didn't even make anything on it. So I got to thinking, I'm like, how can I get everybody in this place? I'm like, I know what, I'll put a flyer on every chair, right? So I go back up to the table, and I guess, I don't know, maybe they'd been talking or something, but I go back up to the table, And I find the lady that was in charge, and I said, hey, let me ask you one quick question. I said, would you mind if I put some flyers on every chair in the room in here just to make sure everybody gets something? She looked up. She was checking somebody in. She looked up, and she said, now you're pushing it.
So did you get business from that?
Oh, of course, man. Of course. We got buyers. We added a lot of people to our buyers list. And got people that want to borrow money, you know, hard money, because they're looking for fix and flips. And I remember during the auction, I was sitting behind this guy, and he bid up this condo. It was a one-bedroom condo in Charlotte, right? And those condos were worth about probably 40 or 50 thousand. He bid this thing up to close to $60,000, and he won. As soon as he won the bid, I tapped him on the shoulder and I said, "Here's my card. I've got properties just like this, only cheaper."
Yeah, nice.
I know.
That's right? A great. Yeah.
It blew me away. It blew me away. But you know, they don't do near as many auctions at hotels as they used to, right? They with the internet and things, they just don't do that anymore. Even Hudson and Marshall sells most of their properties on the internet, right? But there's auction.com, there's Hudson and Marshall, there's Williams and Williams, there's Realty Bid, there's Zome, X-O-M-E, which used to be Home Search, right? Zome used to be Home Search, and now they changed their name to Zome, and XOME.com. And then there's 10X, 10-X.com, but that's all commercial stuff. 10X.com is all commercial stuff. But my favorite is Zome and Auction.com. Now, the thing I do not like about Auction.com is they will bid, Auction.com will bid against bidders on the seller's behalf to drive up the price, right?
Really?
I don't like that about them at all. And they will do it. They don't hide behind it or anything, but they bid up. And it talks about it in their bidding instructions and bidding rules and regs or whatever you call that, guidelines, I guess. But they'll do that. I don't like that at all.
Now, what about HUD Home Store? Do you still use that a lot or?
Oh my gosh, HUD Home Store. You know, I wrote that book called HUD Homes Half Off, How to Buy Them for Pennies on the Dollar.
How can people get that book, Larry, by the way?
Freehudbook.com is the best way to get it.
Freehudbook.com. Good.
You got it. You'll get a free copy of it. You know, I have some other HUD training, but if you want to just read the book, freehudbook.com. So anyway, with HUD houses, now, remember, HUD is a daily auction, okay? HUD's a daily auction. You can bid on every HUD house every single day, right? So it's a daily auction. And most of them are already listed below market price. And they also provide what's called a PCR. That stands for Property Condition Report. They have a little PCR with every HUD house. HUD's asset manager sends out a field service rep, and they inspect the property, right? Now, check this out. Here's what's on the PCR. It's electrical, plumbing, kitchen, appliances, and roof, right? And all the major, like HVAC and water heater, right?
Yeah.
So that's all the major stuff. Everything else is cosmetic. So you can look at the PCR, and you can determine how bad a HUD house is. Now, I'm going to be the first one to tell you, it's not always 100% accurate, okay? I'll be the first one to tell you, it's not 100% accurate, all right? But it gives you a really, really good indication. The other cool thing about HUD houses, unlike some of the other bank-owned properties, is all HUD houses have been cleared out. They've all been cleaned out. The carpet's been removed if they were smelly. I've never, ever, ever been into a smelly HUD house. Never been into a smelly HUD house, because if the house smells from animals or whatever, they rip the carpet out.
Nice. So do you still bid actively on HUD today?
A little bit, not near as much, and I'll tell you why. That's because the HUD inventory has dropped considerably. Now, we talked earlier about going deep in a market or going wide. If you're going to do HUD, you need to go wide in the market, right? In other words, don't just think you're going to be working in one or two counties and buy HUD houses. You're going to need to be working in one or two states if you're going to buy HUD houses, right? So you need to go wide if you're doing HUD, okay? The other cool thing about them, you can buy them at a discount still even in today's market, and there's no deed restrictions. A lot of people say, oh, you got to hold a HUD house for 90 days. That's not true. What those people are talking about and confused about is if you're selling a house to a buyer and the buyer's getting an FHA loan, which is the same as HUD, then FHA will not make a loan on a house, whether it's a HUD house or bank-owned house or you got it from an individual. if you haven't owned that house at least 90 days. That's what they're talking about, okay? And there's also a lot of data available for a HUD house too, right? There's a lot of data available for HUD houses as well. So they have a lot on their website. So I do like HUD. There's just not as many of them as there used to be, right? So that's pretty much about all the listed stuff. You got stuff that's listed on Craigslist, some that are on the MLS, some with individual owners, you know, and on eBay and Realtor and Zillow and HUD, you know, and there's other stuff out there like Hubzoo or what is that called? HomePath, you know, those are bank owned properties. Those are Fannie Mae loans that have been foreclosed on. But all those are you're going to find on Zillow.com or Realtor.com. Yep. So you can still get deals there, especially in the small town. And it's also the reason we wanted to spend so much time talking about MLS or listed properties is we know there's a lot of people on a limited budget. Even though there's not as many right now as there once was or in a down market, there's not near as many. However, when you hit a down market or if you're on a limited budget, man, you can buy some good deals on the MLS.
Yeah.
And it doesn't require a marketing budget. It just requires time.
Yep. Somebody's going to ask, Larry, you have to have access to money, funds. You got to have a proof of funds. What do you say to that?
Oh, on the MLS, let me tell you something. If a realtor asks you for proof of funds, it means either number one, they don't believe you or they don't feel comfortable that you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So when you get to the point where you can talk to agents over the phone and they don't ask you for proof of funds letter, you know you're getting good over the phone. Because if they ever ask you for a proof of funds letter or a copy of your bank statement or whatever, it means they either think you're a newbie or you're just, you know, you don't know what you're doing, right? Because when you get to the point where you can get on the phone and talk to them intelligently, right, and talk to them and get them to like you and trust you and believe you know what you're doing, they're not going to ask you for a proof of funds.
Yep. All right. So, but if they do, what do you do?
If they do, here's what I say. Not everybody can say this, okay? But here's what I say just to kind of put them in their place. Okay. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's what I say, right? I say, if they say, oh, well, you know, we've never done business before and I need to get a copy of a proof of funds letter or something. I say, you know, that's not a big deal at all. It's not a problem. If you want, I can have one of my assistants. Notice I said one of my assistants, you know, email you a copy of the bank statement showing you that we can pay cash for 30 or 40 of these houses. Will that work? Yeah. It just puts them in their place. That's all it does, right?
All right?
Now, here's what happens. And please, guys, don't take that the wrong way. But here's what happens. Up until this point, they felt like I was pursuing them, right? They felt like I was pursuing them, right? And I was just a pain. I'm just another investor, maybe even a wannabe investor, you know, that they think maybe can't close or doesn't know what they're doing, right? Possibly. But whenever I say, I'll be glad to send you a bank statement showing you we can pay cash for 30 or 40 of these houses, then all of a sudden they're chasing me, right? Mm-hmm. They're pursuing me. They're thinking, man, I got a big fish here. I don't need to lose this guy, right? Now they're talking about, oh, I got some more properties I could send you if you'd like, right? Mm-hmm.
All right, so but what about the guy listening?
I know not everybody can do that. So if you can't, it's okay. There's plenty of places online where you can get a free proof of funds letter from Transactional Funding. There's so many places out there that you can do that. And all you got to do is Google Transactional Funding Proof of Funds or POF. And a bunch of them will pop up. You just fill out a little thing. They'll send you one, send it to the agent, you're done.
And one of the things I recommend is contact some of your buyers. So get some buyers on your list, contact some buyers and say, hey, listen, can I use your bank statement or proof of funds from your bank? So, cause I'm going to go out and find some deals. And if you find a good buyer, they won't have a problem with that. You can tell them, listen, you can blank out your name and the account number and personal information. I just need something that I can give to these realtors who are asking me. And you should be able to find a buyer to do that, right?
Absolutely. But also, if you made a good point, Joe, if you ever send somebody a copy of your bank statement, always make sure you white out the last three or four digits of the account number. Make sure you do that, because there could be a situation that they could pull money out of your account. If you were making an offer on a property and didn't send a deposit, they might be able to pull money out of your account. So always make sure they don't have the full account number.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done that before, where I had a private investor friend of mine who we were getting some deals, doing some deals together. And his bank, he didn't want to give me a bank statement, but he said, I'll give you a letter from the president of the bank. So he did. He gave me a letter from the president of the bank, basically saying, we're good for this.
And that is awesome. That is awesome. So guys, you should be able to, with this, what you just learned in this module, you should be able to not only locate, but set up saved searches, search every day, call the realtors, make offers on MLS, Zillow properties, on HUD, you know, auction properties, anything you're wanting to that's already listed online somewhere, you should be able to go out there and make offers on those deals right away, and there's zero marketing cost in that.
Yes, very good. All right, Larry, let's break this video right there. Next, guys, we're going to be talking about making offers using Larry's one pager, which is awesome, and how to use realtors' contracts if you have to, if it's listed. We're going to be talking about that. Good? We good, Larry? Let's take a break.
And negotiating. We're going to talk about that too.
Nice. Awesome.